Welcome back to another deep dive. So today we are looking at something every single one of you has likely experienced.
Oh, absolutely. It is incredibly common.
Right. And it is easily, you know, one of the most uniquely frustrating experiences in modern business. I mean, think about it. You pour your coffee, you open up your analytics dashboard, and you just see green arrows everywhere.
Best feeling in the world.
Exactly. Your page views are through the roof. Visitors are like spending minutes on the page. They're scrolling all the way to the bottom, clicking around your navigation menus.
Right. They're highly engaged.
Yeah. And it feels like this massive win. The dopamine is just flowing. But then, you know, you switch over to your actual sales numbers.
Yeah.
Your conversions, your signups.
But it's flat.
Completely flat. Just crickets.
Yeah. It's a brutal reality check.
Right.
Because on the surface, I mean, the math simply does not add up.
Right.
If the foot traffic is there and they are actively interacting with the, you know, the environment you built, the immediate assumption is that the cash register should be ringing.
And the immediate instinct for anyone running that campaign is to blame the presentation, right? We assume the copy is weak. Or we need to run another A-B test on the hero image.
Or the offer just isn't sweet enough.
Exactly. But today we are doing a deep dive into this really fascinating strategy brief from the DayClerk Weekly podcast. It's titled, Why the Segment You Trust Most is Often the One Lying to You.
That's a great piece.
It really is. And our mission today is to decode this whole analytics trap, right? To uncover why the audience segment that looks like your absolute best might actually be the very segment quietly sabotaging your business.
Right. And sabotage is a strong word, but it is it's entirely accurate in terms of what it does to your strategy, even if the user has no malicious intent.
Right. They aren't trying to ruin your day.
Exactly. But to understand this, we have to look entirely past the raw quantitative data on the dashboard. We're going to examine the deep, often invisible psychological mismatch between what a visitor expects when they click a link and the action a business ultimately demands of them.
You know, when I was going through the research for this, I couldn't help but think of it in terms of like throwing a house party.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah, so you invite a bunch of people and this one specific group of guests shows up early and they are incredibly enthusiastic. They eat all the appetizers, they take over the playlist, they're playing all the games in the living room.
The perfect guests, basically.
Right, from the outside, they look like the life of the party. Mm. But the absolute second it's time to chip in for the pizza delivery, they vanish.
Poof. Gone.
Completely gone.
Yeah.
And you're left holding the bill wondering, you know, are these inherently bad guests or did I just invite them to the completely wrong kind of party?
That is exactly it. They are just there for a different experience than the one you are trying to finalize.
Right.
So to understand why those specific guests aren't pulling out their wallets, we have to redefine the forces driving website traffic. The brief actually breaks this down by distinguishing between two completely different behavioral forces.
Magnetism versus momentum.
Yes, magnetism versus momentum.
So, I mean, I hear you on magnetism. If my SEO strategy is locked in, right, and I'm ranking on the first page, I'm pulling people in, that's magnetic.
Exactly.
But I'm looking at my dashboard and, you know, a click is a click. If they are already on my site, isn't it purely my copywriter's fault if they don't hit buy?
Not necessarily.
Like, why are we letting the copywriter off the hook here by inventing a new term like momentum?
Because magnetism only measures visibility and intrigue.
Yeah.
It just proves your hook worked. Momentum, on the other hand, is the internal, the friction-overcoming drive a user possesses to actually solve their problem with a purchase.
So it's an internal thing they bring with them.
Exactly. And the massive analytics trap that catches so many smart operators is conflating the two. Just because a segment of your audience finds your content interesting or useful does not mean they find your product necessary.
Wow. Okay, so you were saying I can't just force momentum into existence with, like, a punchier headline or a countdown timer.
You absolutely cannot. And this is where we see a structural failure rather than a copy failure.
A structural failure.
Yeah. I mean, if a visitor's underlying intent is purely informational, like they are just browsing to understand a concept, and your landing page is written explicitly for a decision maker who is authorized to spend $10,000 today, no amount of aggressive copywriting will bridge that gap.
Right, because they just aren't the same person.
You are trying to force purchase momentum onto someone whose only momentum is curiosity. It would be like trying to convince someone who just walked into a public library to buy the physical bookshelf.
Oh, that's such a good way to put it.
Right. They are there to borrow the information, not invest in the furniture.
That structural mismatch makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So if we have these, you know, highly magnetic, low momentum visitors artificially inflating our engagement metrics. Who exactly are they?
Well, the source gets incredibly specific about this.
Yeah, they outline three distinct archetypes, right, that routinely skew data.
Yes. These are the segments that show up in your analytics looking like your biggest advocates, but who are, practically speaking, immune to standard conversion architecture.
Okay, so let's break them down. The first one outlined is the discovery-driven deal seeker.
Right. The deal seekers are your classic, aggressive comparison shoppers. They are highly active. I mean, they will read your pricing tiers carefully.
Oh, yeah, they look at everything.
They click your calls to action to see the secondary screens. They will often initiate the checkout process just to see what the final price looks like with taxes and shipping.
Or to test if a discount code applies.
Exactly. But their fundamental psychological state is mid-process. They are gathering data to, you know, build a spreadsheet in their head.
This feels exactly like someone test driving 10 different cars on a sunny Saturday just for the thrill of it.
Yes, that's the exact energy.
Versus someone whose transmission blew up yesterday and they absolutely need to secure a reliable commuter car before Monday morning.
Right.
The person test driving 10 cars is highly engaged. I mean, they are asking the dealer a million questions about the torque and the stereo system.
But they aren't signing financing papers today. And think about how the car dealer usually reacts to that Saturday driver. They apply pressure.
Yeah. Someone else is looking at this car. It might be gone by Monday.
Right. In the digital space, marketers use urgency-heavy copy. But for the deal seeker archetype, that artificial pressure backfires instantly.
Wait, really? Why does it backfire?
Because they know they are in a discovery phase. Artificial urgency just triggers their defense mechanisms. It confirms their suspicion that they are being rushed into a suboptimal deal.
Oh, I see.
And so they immediately pull away to continue your research elsewhere.
Makes total sense. So deal seekers are driven by price and optionality, but the source contrasts that with a second group that isn't primarily worried about money at all.
Right. They are entirely starved for time.
The solo or resource-constrained operator.
Yes. And this is a highly deceptive archetype for B2B and software as a service businesses.
Yeah.
These are the one-person marketing departments, the founders wearing too many hats, the overwhelmed managers.
The people doing five jobs at once.
Exactly. And they engage deeply with your content. They read the long-form case studies. They download the gated templates. They spend 20 minutes on your feature breakdown pages.
Which looks amazing on a dashboard.
It looks incredible. But they are engaging to extract actionable insights for their own immediate daily survival. They are essentially using your top-of-funnel marketing material as a free masterclass to do their jobs.
Well, wait, they must like the product. If they are spending that much time studying it, right?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't a targeted retargeting ad with a solid discount push them over the edge?
Because a discount doesn't solve their actual problem.
It doesn't.
No. The friction preventing them from buying isn't financial, it's operational. They are paralyzed by overwhelm. If you assume this solo operator just needs a 10% off coupon to convert, you are fundamentally misreading their anxiety.
Oh, wow. Because giving a drowning person a discount on a boat doesn't help if they don't know how to drive the boat.
Exactly. What the solo operator actually needs is operational reassurance. Their internal monologue is saying, if I buy this software, I am going to have to spend 20 hours migrating my data and learning a new interface, and I don't have 20 hours.
Right. I barely have 20 minutes.
Exactly. So if your campaign copy is just shouting about features and aggressive pricing, instead of, you know, systematically de-risking the onboarding process and proving they can get value in 3 hours, they will bounce.
They'll just take your free template and leave.
Every time.
Which brings us to the third archetype. And this one is less about the individual's time or money and more about the environment they operate in, the parent demographic segment.
Right.
And the brief clarifies this isn't just like literal parents buying baby strollers. It applies to any major household or consensus-driven decision.
Right. When you look at consumer behavior for significant household investments, so buying a family vehicle, booking an expensive vacation, choosing a mortgage, or even investing in a premium mattress.
The big ticket items.
Yeah. These are almost never impulsive single actor decisions. The decision maker in this scenario is a thorough researcher who requires multiple touch points.
And they absolutely must achieve consensus with other stakeholders. Usually a partner.
Exactly.
Right, because nobody is buying a $40,000 minivan on a whim while scrolling on their phone in the checkout line at the grocery store.
No, absolutely not.
Even if they love the van, they have to, you know, take the specs back to their spouse, cross-reference the safety ratings, check the household budget.
And yet, examine how most campaigns targeting this demographic are structured.
How do you mean?
They are built as a single-shot close. The marketer gets the user onto the landing page, and the entire architecture of the page demands that they buy right then and there.
Oh, right. Like, buy now. Buttons everywhere.
Exactly. And when the user inevitably leaves to go do their due diligence and discuss it with their partner, the business looks at the bounce rate and assumes their copy failed.
But it wasn't the copy at all.
The copy wasn't the failure. The format completely ignored the multi-stakeholder reality of how this archetype makes decisions.
Okay, wait. If these deal seekers hate urgency, and the solo operators are terrified of onboarding, and the parents need 3 weeks in a family meeting to decide,
yeah,
how are they all ending up on the exact same high-pressure bottom-of-funnel landing page in the first place? I mean, is the initial ad targeting just completely broken?
It is a fundamental architectural flaw, which the brief terms the intent gap.
The intent gap.
Yes. The failure actually occurs before the web page even renders. By the time someone is looking at your final sales page, their intent was already permanently shaped by the specific source that brought them there.
Okay, so this intent gap. Is this like the difference between me searching how to fix a leaking pipe under the sink because I want a quick DIY tutorial versus me searching 24-hour emergency plumber near me?
Precisely. That's a great example. The first search is discovery-oriented. The mental state of that visitor is educational.
Right. I just want a YouTube video.
Exactly. But the second search carries massive immediate purchase momentum. The golden rule of the intent gap is that you cannot fix top-of-funnel educational traffic with a bottom-of-funnel hard-sell landing page.
Right.
The gap between teach me how to do this and enter your credit card to hire us is simply too wide for any copywriter to bridge in a single step.
So if that intent is basically locked in before they even arrive, does that mean most businesses are just like rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic when they obsess over tweaking their button colors or headline fonts?
Yes. And it is actually much worse than just wasting time rearranging deck chairs.
How worse?
Because if you do this wrong, you actively sink the ship faster.
Yeah.
And this brings us to the most dangerous insight in the entire strategy brief, the compounding optimization trap.
The compounding optimization trap. Okay, walk me through exactly how a business falls into this, because it sounds like a self-inflicted wound.
It really is. It is a devastating feedback loop, especially for small and medium businesses that rely heavily on their dashboard metrics.
Right.
Let's trace a hypothetical scenario. You launch a new campaign, your targeting is a bit broad, and you get a massive influx of traffic from our solo operator archetype.
Right, the overworked people looking for free education.
Exactly. So you look at your analytics and see they are spending 4 minutes on the page, but nobody is buying.
My instinct there is to look at the heat map, see where they stop reading, and try to give them more value to push them down the page.
Which is exactly what the trap relies on.
Oh, no.
You decide to optimize the page to serve that highly engaged traffic. You rewrite the copy to answer more of their educational questions. You add a downloadable free guide right above the pricing tier.
Right, providing more value.
And it works. The page becomes a much better resource for that specific non-buying segment. Their time on page goes up to 6 minutes. Lead magnet downloads spike.
And the marketing team is high-fiving because the engagement metrics look incredible on paper.
Yes. You feel like you are making real, measurable progress. But all you have done is build a highly optimized 5-star library for people who are never going to buy your bookshelves.
Wow.
Because you optimize for the loudest, most engaged signal, you accidentally pivoted your entire product messaging to appease a segment that lacks purchase momentum.
That is wild.
And this loop delays the painful realization that you are acquiring the wrong users. I mean, a business can burn through 6 months of ad budget, time, and creative energy moving in completely the wrong direction.
Entirely, because they let the wrong audience dictate their optimization strategy?
Exactly.
That's genuinely terrifying. I mean, you are essentially letting the passengers who refuse to buy tickets dictate the route of the train.
That's a perfect way to look at it.
So how do you break out of that? If standard A/B testing just pushes you deeper into the trap, what is the actual mechanism for fixing it?
The source material advocates for a discipline that most operators skip because it feels too slow. Rigorous behavioral analysis before a single word of copy is drafted. The typical workflow is to come up with an offer, assign it to a writer, and hit publish. Teams rely on this informal collective assumption that they, you know the customer.
Right. We just assume we know who we're talking to.
But Understanding your customer in a broad demographic sense is entirely different from understanding the precise psychological state of an archetype at a specific moment in a campaign.
It sounds like you have to almost run a simulation of the user's mind before you build the page.
You do. Before wireframing a page, you must answer a strict set of behavioral questions.
Like what?
Well, what does this specific archetype already firmly believe to be true before the page loads? What are their immediate, visceral anxieties in this exact moment? What specific claim would make them pause and become skeptical?
Wow, that is deep.
And what specific operational proof would make them feel safe enough to take on the risk of buying? When you answer those questions honestly, you realize that conversion friction is rarely a UX problem. It is almost always a sequencing problem.
Ah, you're asking for marriage on the first date when they just wanted to know if you like the same coffee shop.
Precisely.
So this leaves us with a massive strategic tension. We have this flood of deal seekers, solo operators, and consensus builders on our site. They are engaging, but they aren't buying today. What do we actually do with them?
This is where the strategy brief moves from theory to resource management. It outlines two very reasonable but totally conflicting strategic paths for a business to take once they identify these high engagement, low momentum visitors.
Okay, let's lay out the options. What is the first path?
Path A is the nurture approach. This perspective views engagement as a valid leading indicator. It assumes that because these people are spending time with your brand, there's latent value there.
So they might buy eventually.
Right. So the strategy is to intentionally sequence the relationship. Instead of demanding a high friction purchase, you pivot the conversion goal to a lower commitment action. You ask them to subscribe to an industry newsletter, download an operational guide, or create a free account to save their configuration for later.
Okay, I see.
You capture the lead, and you systematically nurture that initial magnetism over weeks or months until it finally converts into purchase momentum.
That sounds like the textbook inbound marketing dream, right?
Yeah.
You build a relationship, you provide value, and you win them over.
Mm.
But you mentioned a conflicting path.
Path B is the focus approach. And it is rooted in the brutal reality of resource constraints.
Budget and time.
Exactly. For a mid-market or small business, building and maintaining a sophisticated multi-touch nurture sequence is a massive operational luxury.
Yeah, that takes a lot of work.
It requires expensive automation software, a constant pipeline of new content, and dedicated management to score those leads. So Path B argues that you might be significantly more profitable if you write your campaigns explicitly and exclusively for the much smaller, high-intent segment.
The people who have their credit cards out today.
Yes, and simply let the browsers figure it out on their own.
Oh, man, I can hear every sales director listening to this screaming right now.
Oh, I'm sure.
I mean, if we just ignore the high engagement folks, the ones reading all our case studies, and only target that tiny sliver of ready-to-buy traffic, aren't we just abandoning perfectly good leads and leaving money on the table for our competitors?
It is a valid fear, and it feels deeply counterintuitive to ignore engaged traffic. But the counterargument is that if you dilute your messaging and burn your operational budget trying to convert people who fundamentally aren't ready, you might go out of business before they ever make up their minds.
Ouch, that's a harsh reality.
It is. The brief doesn't offer a clean universal answer here because there isn't one.
Right.
It depends entirely on the unit economics of your product, your profit margins, and crucially, your internal capacity to actually execute a nurture sequence without it becoming a distraction.
So it isn't about finding the right answer in a vacuum.
Yeah.
It's about making a deliberate choice.
Exactly. The vital takeaway is that you absolutely must have this specific argument out loud in your planning meetings.
You can't just assume.
Right. You have to explicitly decide, as a team, whether you are nurturing these archetypes or filtering them out. Rather than defaulting to the dangerous, lazy assumption of, you know, let's just optimize the page and hope they all eventually buy.
Man, we have covered a massive amount of ground today, and it really changes how you look at those green arrows on a dashboard.
It definitely shifts your perspective.
It does. I mean, we started by separating the illusion of magnetism from the actual driving force of purchase momentum.
Mm-hmm.
We identified those three tricky archetypes, the deal seekers, the overwhelmed solo operators, and the consensus-driven parents who are actively skewing our analytics.
Right.
We unpack that terrifying compounding trap where businesses accidentally optimize themselves into a corner by serving the wrong segment.
The five-star library.
The five-star library, exactly.
Yeah.
And finally, we explored that brutal strategic choice between building a long-term nurture path or ruthlessly focusing limited resources on high-intent buyers.
It demands a fundamental shift in how you audit your own performance. You have to stop blindly trusting the sheer volume of a metric and start rigorously questioning the intent behind it.
Absolutely. And before we wrap up, we want to leave you with one final provocative thought to chew on before you open up your analytics platform tomorrow morning. This builds directly on the idea of simulating your users' behavior.
Yeah. We've spent this entire time talking about how to either accommodate these high engagement, low intent visitors with nurture sequences, or how to strategically ignore them. But consider this alternative. What if you intentionally built a repellent into your top of funnel landing pages?
A repellent, you mean actively driving traffic away?
Yes. What if you deliberately utilize hyper-specific copy, aggressive pricing transparency right at the top of the page, or strict qualification hurdles that instantly and actively turn away the comparison shoppers, the free resource hunters, and the casual information gatherers? If you implemented a repellent, your page views and time on page metrics would plummet overnight. Which sounds like an absolute nightmare for any modern marketer.
That sounds terrifying.
But think about the quality of the analytics that would be left behind. The data you would be looking at the next morning would be absolute purified intent.
So the question we leave you with is this. Would you be brave enough to intentionally tank your own vanity metrics and watch your engagement numbers crash if it meant you would never fall for the analytics trap again?
It's a huge shift.
It is a wild concept and a complete paradigm shift for anyone obsessed with traffic. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive today. We hope you take this back to your own dashboards and campaign briefs with a completely new perspective on exactly who is showing up to your party and who is actually going to help pay for the pizza. Until next time.